Right, so I was involved in this thing called the National Ministry Survey, there was basically three parts to this. They interviewed a load of what they call active Protestants. That meant people who attend a Protestant church at least once a month. And so it's excluding Catholics and Orthodox. It's also excluding those who like, I go once a year or something like that. So relatively regular church goes, Protestant church. Then we surveyed everyone who's not that. So that when it says general public in the survey, it means basically non-Christians, but non-reasonably regular Protestant church goes. Does that make sense? So the general public would include Catholic, Orthodox, nominal Christians, and religions and non-religious. They also did a survey of church leaders, and that was mainly conservative local church leaders. So it's distributed through the networks that you might be familiar with. Also, we did try to kind of make some of the questions similar to questions that were done in 2015 by the Talking Jesus research. So it sort of wasn't exactly the same categories, we can go into that, but pretty similar. In terms of the census data, you'll be aware that, you know, as Barry was saying, like, some stuff would have changed over the last 10 years. Frustratingly, it's still not out yet. So 2021, I think next month, they're going to, in June actually, they're going to start to roll out some of this stuff. And then they're going to roll out the full data from June for the next 2 years. So it's like, it's really frustrating. So it might be like 2024 before you get like the really granular kind of, you know, the stuff you get on Data Shark where you can zoom into exactly your, you know, ward and cross-check it by everything. Some of that microdata might take quite a long time to come out. But are you familiar with that, Rob? Have you been following that?
A bit. The census stuff. I was wondering when it was going to...
Yeah, I was hoping that some of it might be out by now. But yeah, still it's taking its time.
Can I ask that's a really stupid question then?
Yeah.
So active Protestants, obviously, you know, once a month, Christians. The general public is not non-Christians. It's just, it's
everyone else.
Everyone. And they might go to church, but they're not active Protestants.
They certainly won't go to a church more regularly than once a month.
Yeah.
So okay. They might go a couple of times a year or something like that. Yeah.
Thank you.
So you could consider nominal Christians,
pagans as well.
Absolutely, yeah, that's right. Great, just to run through a few results, and then we can sort of, I mean, do something at any point, but we can talk about it at the end as well. Just in terms of, they asked people when they became Christian, they asked those who are now active Protestants, you know, when were you converted, and you can see there that, as in previous surveys, but actually there's a bit more spread than some of the previous surveys. There is actually quite a few in that kind of later childhood years than previous surveys have pushed it very, very early. This did actually show, you know, in that 11 to 17 age group, significant number, so key age. In terms of people going, walking away, so they're now asking people who don't now say they're a Christian, but they were brought up as a Christian, they say they're brought up as a Christian, why did you walk away? Oh no, at this point, when did you walk away? And you can see massive proportion in that 11 to 17 categories, as many will be aware, yes, that sort of teenage period. When they ask people, why did you, what were significant factors in you coming to Christ, becoming Christian, to those who are now active Protestants? Interesting, just over half, the most common answer was attending church services in person, which is interesting, hopefully encouraging. Like, if you're planting a church, church is significant. It was a significant part in most people's stories of coming to faith. Interestingly, on that, I haven't got it on that slide, but one of the other ones that was a bit lower down, it was somewhere around sort of 15%, I think, was watching church services online. Now, I thought that's interesting because you know, relatively low percentage, 15% or something. But that is, I think that's only really been a thing for like the last few years. And if you take out everybody who was converted when they were a child, so presumably, you know, not in the last 2 or 3 years, then actually probably a very high proportion of people who have been converted in the last few years, watching a service online was a significant thing for them.
It's also remarkable because most of them are rubbish. Church online is rubbish.
Church online, yes. Yeah. Well, it's a miracle. It is a miracle. In terms of factors why people are still a Christian, is it, you know, what has kept you going as a Christian? Again, church, very significant. It's the welcome, inclusiveness, support, music, and Bible teaching is in there. In terms of getting to this sort of defeated beliefs blockers, they ask people who brought up as Christian, now walked away, why did you walk away? Mm-hmm. And the biggest response was science, actually. I was surprised by that. Surely we're postmodern now, we're not too bothered about the whole thing. Surely that old debate about science and religion, that's a bit old hat. But actually, that is a significant thing. Most, you know, why science answers questions better. Moving to sort of active Protestants, they ask them, you know, when was your last conversation with someone who's not a Christian about Jesus? I thought this was encouraging, really. 25% of people said in the last week. So all active Protestants, 25%, in the last week I had a conversation with someone who's not a Christian about Jesus. That was higher than I thought. When I checked back the figures for 6 years before, around the same kind of ballpark, a little bit higher actually in terms of within the last week, but roughly similar in terms of within the last month. Church leaders were asked the same kind of question, and the numbers were even higher, so 45% in the last week, 37% in the last month, which that's outside of their formal ministry role. They said, yeah, outside of your normal sort of formal ministry role, when you last have a conversation with someone about Jesus, quite high. There's something that's encouraging. You know, evangelism is happening, so I think we don't need to be. When they asked church leaders, how much do you think people in your congregation are evangelizing? I think it's sort of lower than this. I think most people are kind of more pessimistic. But actually, there's quite a lot going on. They asked people why, asked those who felt kind of confident about talking about Jesus, why is that? Religion answers. I was interested actually how low down, it's really small, but the last couple were, I have the resources I need to have constructive conversations about my faith. So I have the resources I need, evangelistic resources. I feel I'm well equipped. And the lowest one was, I'm fearful for these people entering into the interview without knowing Jesus. Found it interesting, those were towards the bottom. The ones towards the top were things like I feel at ease, I don't feel under pressure, I'm happy doing it, basically. Somewhere in the middle is I love these people, I want them to know Jesus, which sounds like a pretty good motivation.
Is that one's about motive, isn't it?
Yes, motive. This is a sort of motive.
So it's not confidence though, is it?
Yeah, I mean, the question was something about you said you feel comfortable and confident talking to people about Jesus, you know, why is that? It's a slightly, okay. Not quite sure whether this is a motive thing or reasons for feeling sort of enabled, I guess.
So in other words, if we wanted to address that, we want the fact that we want more people to feel fearful that people are asking to turn to you without Jesus.
Well, I mean, in terms of what you're saying about, we've got to be careful how we phrase that in terms of the definite atonement. But it's interesting that sort of the classic Rico Tice sort of glory of God, Gehenna, what is it, 3 G's, grace, those sort of ones were not actually at the top in terms of motivation. This is quite a striking one. 71% of the general public cannot remember having a conversation with a Christian about their faith in the last 10 years. So they basically said, like, when is the last time in the last 10 years, that someone talked to you, a Christian talked to you about their faith? 71% says, anyone else?
So the same person is being reached by those 25% of
people who said that conversation last week. Well, that's
one bloke who's going to the
crowd. Well, that's interesting. And that's what this slide shows.
Got better memory.
So that's exactly, I think that is part of the explanation. So they asked active Protestants, the last conversation you had, who was it with? Then it was with a friend, a family member, work colleagues. So a lot of it is with friends. When they ask the general public, that last conversation that you remember the Christian trying to share their faith with you, how well did you know that person? And it was in that kind of fairly well category, which again sounds like kind of friends, colleagues, perhaps, that kind of area. Probably not so much family members, but in the fellow. So it's not the strangers, it's not the neighbours even so much. It is kind of the friends. And also when you look at the figures of just how many active Protestants there are in the UK, I can't remember the exact figures, but I sort of tried to come up with some estimates. And you think, okay, even if a quarter of those people are really very active, it's going to still take them a very long time to reach the whole of the UK, because it's, even if they were talking to all their neighbours and stuff, because it is actually quite small number of people we're talking about here. But positively, when those conversations did happen, certainly from the point of view of Christians, they say, well, how did you think that conversation went with your friend? 63% said, yeah, I think it was basically had a positive impact on them. They said, what do you think were some of the outboxes for people after you had that conversation? A quarter of them expressed an interest in going to church. Various different things, not at massively high levels, but I was struck by this, 11%, they became a Christian largely as a result of our conversation. That's I think that's quite exciting, isn't it, really? So when did you last have a conversation? I had a conversation with this friend, a month ago, whatever it was. What do you think was the result of that? Well, one in 10 cases, he said, I think they actually became Christian largely as a result of that conversation. And that's worth
better than my strike rate.
Someone's doing that's someone who's doing better than me.
More of a sniper.
they also asked the same kind of question to the person who had been evangelized. How did you find that? And again, quite positive, really. I felt comfortable. About two-thirds of them felt, I was comfortable having that conversation. Most of these things, the green is the kind of positive one, is quite a lot higher than the red one. So, that third one along, 45% went away feeling more positive about Jesus than they had before, compared to 18% felt more negative. But interestingly, at the end, the ones the other way around, actually more felt glad that they weren't Christian than that felt, actually, I wish I had their faith. So a mixed bag there. This one is quite striking as well. They basically asked a question, two statements. It's okay for religious people to try and persuade other people of their beliefs, or everyone should leave everyone else alone, which do you feel represents your view more? And 73% went for the, I think everyone should leave everyone else alone, and it's a good thing to try and persuade other people of your religious belief. I just did a sort of a cross cut of that by, they got all the kind of demographic data on all these people, and 73% was if it was a nominal Christian, because they're part of the general public, again, about 73%. Jewish, about 73%. But if you ask Muslims, you see those percentages are a lot lower. And this is that everyone should leave everyone else alone. So 44% Muslims. So basically, what's that the other way? 56% said, understandably thought, it's fine for people to try and convert other people. A little bit less with Hindus and Sikhs. So it's interesting, Barry's observations on there, perhaps a more kind of pluralist kind of idea. But all of those lower in terms of not liking the idea of conversion than the general public as a whole and nominal Christians and atheists and Muslims.
Interesting to see what that is amongst active Protestants.
Yes, well, that's interesting. Yes, yeah. I could come back to some figures on that. I think it was a fairly high proportion, sort of around 2/3 did feel it was every Christian's responsibility to try and share their faith, something like that, among active Protestants. There probably would be some unhappy about that as well. So not very happy about this idea of someone trying to convert someone else, but an openness to conversation. So if they asked, how comfortable do you feel having a conversation with these different sorts of people? If they wanted to talk to you about their faith or specifically about Jesus. So the first one is just religion in general, Jesus in particular. The one that struck me was 54%, with a friend. I'd be happy, I'd be comfortable having a conversation with a friend if they wanted to talk to me about their faith in Jesus, which I think that's quite an encouraging stat. So you've got this thing of conversion, don't like that. Conversation, that's all right. I think, and research has kind of actually helped to kind of bring out this fact that there do seem to be these two kind of norms operating in British society in general, that trying to put your views on someone else or try and persuade them of your views, that's a bad thing, we don't like that. But having an open sort of sharing of like, I'll hear yours, you hear my views, we just have a conversation, that is an okay kind of thing. So we could talk about this, but I think that's just quite interesting. On one side, we are supposed to persuade people. I mean, the gospel is about persuasion. There is a need for people to repent and change their mind, and there is there seems to be particularly this kind of, in this particular cultural moment, a real kind of nervousness about changing opinions, any opinions or anything. The idea of one person trying to persuade someone else with their opinion and changing their mind is like seen as a quite dangerous thing, some kind of power play, some quite worrying thing. We need to be aware of that, but hold our nerve. That we do want to persuade and people to repent. But also, I think on the other side, I was just struck by how the language of conversion, and when you look at a step Bible thing, looking at the words for convert, that proselyte, the technical word used for convert, usually which translates to convert, is only used of converts to Judaism or the Pharisees, actually, who cross seas to make one convert. That's a proselyte word. It's not used of Christians. So there's that idea of repenting, but I'm just wondering whether conversion is kind of, just interesting to think about that language, particularly when the whole cultural thing of like, is someone converting from, this sort of cultural associations, isn't it? Am I having to become not Indian or not? Am I actually having to change my culture? Is that what we're being asking people to do? I think when people ask their reasons for not feeling comfortable talking to Christians about their faith, you see that last one there, it was in the top four. I would feel like I'm being recruited now. And I was talking to our neighbour recently, I was just invited into church, and she's saying, something about kind of, I tell you, I just got the impression she thought that I was wanting to recruit, oh yeah, you need a few more people to come to your club. Do you know what I mean? That kind of thing. That's not what I'm talking about. But I wonder whether we just need to be conscious that that is maybe what people are reacting against when they're kind of, I don't like the idea of conversion. I don't like these people trying to recruit me to their thing. But yeah, you can see there again the idea of absolute truth, the kind of slight postmodern kind of thing, religion causing wars. People ask that question about have people become more open in a sort of pandemic. I don't think it's massive really, but it does seem in the kind of the younger demographic, sort of 18 to 24s, 25% seem to be more open. So I mean, it's not a massive thing. Overall, if you look across the population as a whole, most people say that they're about the same level of openness as I did before. But there does seem to be perhaps a bit more openness in the young demographic. Then they ask people, how comfortable are you attending these different sorts of events? And they say explicitly at a Protestant evangelical kind of church, so they might be talking to Catholics, you know, so it's not saying, you're a nominal Catholic, would you be happy coming to a Catholic? This is like, would you be happy coming to these things put on by an evangelical Protestant church? And those kind of colours in the block, the green is people who would be very comfortable or comfortable across the population as a whole. And you can see around half, just over half, perhaps, somewhere around half would be happy to come to a church service, like even a normal church service. But particularly Easter or Christmas, a lot less so for somewhere around kind of a third quarter to a Bible study group or an evangelistic course or to read the Bible one-to-one. Encouragingly, if you look at all those figures in terms of London, they're a bit higher. So you can see there sort of, around half comes with normal church service, but just slightly higher for those other ones. The next couple of slides I haven't shared with anyone before, so because they're slightly more sensitive kind of data, but I've cross-cut it by a few different things. Muslims, I found this really interesting. So less likely to come to a church service. Maybe around a third, so it's not, still worth a try, but kind of, less. But actually pretty strong in terms of, coming to a group studying the Bible more than the general public in general. 37% to a course is made in Christianity, 41% to meet up with, one-to-one with people, to look at your book together.
Is that because of the fear of people seeing you looking into it yourself? Because the other one suggested that public. People wanted to be anonymous in a big group of people, but if you don't want a big group of people to see you doing it, then a smaller group would be much more agreeable for you.
Yeah.
I've got a question on the ministry survey. When you say you haven't shown this to anyone else, when I look at the National Ministry Survey, I'm not seeing everything there.
No, there's a whole load of kind of, because particularly when you cross cut it by different things, you could do that endlessly. So, like in the next one, I'll just show you, I've done it by sort of ethnicity, which again, a bit sensitive. And you could do it by class as well. You could do you know what I mean? You could cross cut everything by lots and lots of different things. So a lot of the stuff that's public facing is just the kind of the overall stuff. I did an article for Commission, which was the London kind of slant on it.
Is that commanding?
It's on the kind of the website. Just an article. This is for ethnicity. So pink is white British, black is black, and that includes black African and Afro-Caribbean. Brown is Asian, of South Asian and East Asian, but most of that is South Asian. And light blue is other white, which is largely Eastern European.
I think I can see why you can make it public.
Yeah, I thought it might be helpful for you.
Those colours. I thought it was grey.
Yeah, maybe grey, yes. Maybe I should have done
European.
Okay, yes. I find this really interesting. So it's you can see, so white British, go on Christmas, yeah. Okay, we go to church on Christmas, yeah, I feel comfortable with that. Everyone else is about that. But, you know, Eastern Europeans also.
Yeah.
Easter, actually slightly higher for black ethnicity than Christmas. Actually, Easter is okay. And also for Eastern Orthodox, not Eastern Orthodox, but sort of Eastern European background, that's Easter significant time. Normal church service, almost everyone about the same, just under half. A small group where the Bible studied, white British, now I'm not up for that, but you know, black 50%, Eastern European 45%, you know, even Asian higher, considerably higher than white British to go to a group where the Bible's been studied. For a course, again, you see the white British lower, but fairly high. I mean, you know, high for black, and this is not black Christians, yeah, this is black non-Anglican churchgoers. And then for meeting up with for one-to-one, again, really, really pretty low for white British, but significant. Those other ones, I found that interesting. I mean, do get back to me. You can always sort of cross-cut it differently, or you know, if there's a particular segment that you're interested in, you know, you can do it by Indian or Pakistani or Bangladeshi or whatever's of interest. They also asked people who were comfortable coming to at least one of those things, would you be more inclined to come to these things if it was online? And for the basic thing there is that if it's a church service, it doesn't really make a lot of difference. But if it's a small group sort of stuff, actually there is a bit of a win, it seems. Like it does make it more attractive for a considerable number of people. I'll skip through that bit. Just getting on to kind of hopefully making it a bit more practical in terms of evangelism training, what might be some ways this could feed into evangelism training? When they actually ask people, do you have church leaders, do you have some kind of formal evangelism training? And this was, these church leaders are kind of mainly conservative evangelical churches, not massive actually. So 41% at least annually, 27% less than annually, a third of churches not doing anything formal structured.
With the church, or they've not received that training?
No, this is kind of, I guess, on at a church level, you're doing something, either you're...
with your congregation.
Yeah, I think this would include, you know, you're gathering people to watch a Passion for Life video together, or you're giving them some input, or you're just doing something that's not the church service, or you're trying to give them some instruction on evangelism.
Don't those three numbers make 101%?
Yeah, they do. They're rounded, so it's the kind of that rounding thing. But well spotted. I thought someone might notice that. But interesting, when they ask active Protestants for has your church provided evangelism training in the last 2 years, the numbers were lower. Even when you kind of, I mean, obviously there's a whole range of different sorts of churches there. But if you kind of section out the independent free evangelical churches and the Pentecostal churches, that was the highest percentages. But even there, people actually in practice don't think that many, you know, only a quarter of the churches seem to be have done that in the last couple of years. So there really does seem to be, could be more going on. In terms of church goers sort of fears and stuff, it's interesting that half of Christians in London are saying, yeah, I don't know how to talk to non-Christians about Jesus. They were saying, you know, what are some of the factors that make you feel not so confident to talk to your friends about Jesus, well, half says, yeah, I don't feel very well equipped. And the other one you won't be surprised with is I'm afraid of causing offence, which again is slightly higher in London than elsewhere, and was higher than, quite significantly higher than when they asked exactly the same question in 2015. More people afraid of causing offence now than they were 6 years ago. In terms of help that Christians wanted from their churches, that, you know, they're saying, well, what might help you feel more confident, more one-to-one support, giving examples where they've spoken to non-Christians and how those examples turned out well. So I think, you know, people wanting to hear from their church leaders or hear people up the front saying, you know, I had this conversation, this is how it went, you know, that kind of example provides with guidance on how to incorporate it into casual conversation without sounding like I'm trying to convert. So, you know, tapping back into that whole issue of conversation, conversion, provide workshops and skills and FAQs about what might happen, how to deal with it. So I think that sort of walk through, you know, how might this actually go in practice. So I think this is the final slide, but to give a few things. I mean, evangelism training, really, we want to major in the gospel, don't we? Like Perks gave us this morning, that's going to be the real fuel for actually us wanting to share that same good news, that it's actually good news to us. Jesus is actually, he's taken the wrath of God for us. That's going to be absolutely fundamental. But perhaps something, a bit on this whole thing of what do we actually mean by conversion? Actually kind of talk that through. Are we talking about proselytism? Are we trying to recruit people? What do we actually think is going on there? What is repentance? Yeah, sort of a theology of that. But yeah, as I said, models, testimonies, hearing stories, and maybe using some of these kind of stats and stuff. So actually, you do realise that 54% of people are saying like they would be happy to talk to their friend, you know, if their friend talked to them about Jesus, or you know, actually, you know, this percentage would actually be happy to come to church if they're invited. You know, maybe specific to your context, maybe workshopping through some of those kind of conversations, how do you kind of negotiate that? Maybe key apologetics like the science one, so people are aware that is a thing for a considerable number of people, and also just bigging up the fact that church is really significant for people. There is quite a lot of openness to come to church, and when they do come, let's welcome them well. All the kind of not all of that data, but most of it is available there, and there's some stuff you can download to share with churches as well, and there's a bit more analysis there.
I think it's available ministry survey rather than ministry.
Thank you. well spotted, you can see a quickly done PowerPoint. Yes. Fortunately, I didn't register the wrong domain. That really would have been done. So without the R, yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, so that should work with an R. Yeah. Any sort of questions, thoughts, pushback?
Yeah. Just a thought on you said about cutting it different ways. Often people say that with different people from a cultural background or a faith background, that the second generation in terms of settling in London, are these sort of more open to those kind of conversations?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to sort of see your ethnicity thing from the point of view of like, as no, you can judge it like up to 25-year-olds and then, you know, the difference between that and the older age group, perhaps the ones who are second, first generation.
I mean, Barry was really helpful on this earlier, and unfortunately didn't ask people, I don't think it was asked whether they were born in the UK or not.
Yeah, yeah.
But you could do it generationally. Yeah. So you're right, you could do generation and ethnicity, and so they're not that roughly, I guess.
Give you an idea if that is a real thing,
that,
you know.
Yeah.
So, there was one slide about
the likelihood of someone coming along to different or engaging in different types of programs. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which it was, but I mean, all of our times are limited. You know, as church leaders, church planners, in terms of doing evangelism, what would you say would be the one thing that would right now is a sweet spot that we've got to be doing? Like, so certainly, like, it's really encouraging. Invitation to come along to church, there's a high, you know, that's well received, right? But like, you know, running evangelistic programs versus just doing lots of individual door-to-door type work, individual work, like what would you say would be, you know, you've got to be doing this 100% spot on for this?
Well, that's a brilliant question. I don't really feel it's my place to give the answer to it, and maybe particularly as we're just about to sort of which in some ways we didn't directly address in this as well. So I mean, this doesn't cover everything that you could possibly do. It was kind of throwing out a few kind of things, but there are other things that it doesn't talk about, kind of walk-up evangelism, for example, and how well received that is, although it does seem like not many people are having conversations with strangers, but that's just probably a case of it's not happening very much rather than that it's not effective. I mean, it does seem like the church invitation thing is big. I mean, it's great to anecdotally, you just hear a lot of churches at least this Easter, there was a lot of newcomers. I don't know what you guys have found, but that does seem to have been a thing. So that's, you know, praise God for that. I think it does depend a bit on your context. I mean, you always say that, don't you? But it, you know, if I was looking at this and I was in a Muslim context, I think I'd be thinking, I want to be doing more of like inviting people to read the Bible with me, or bring along your Quran as well. And, you know, we'll look at the Bible together. I'd be thinking that if I was in a community that was very white, for example, I might not go so strong on that, you know, and I might put more effort into church, engaging through youth. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Can you just flip to the penultimate slide? Because when you brought up, I just strongly, just remembering that stat about after people have had a conversation with a Christian, most of them were glad not to be, or, you know, didn't want to be good. So it feels like in our evangelism training, we need to address the, like, with our church members, are you pleased to be a Christian? And if they're not, we need to address that. And if they are, we need to help them communicate that. Because if we're having all these openness conversations, but people are coming out of conversations like thinking, I'd rather not be, regardless of whether it's true or not, I'd rather not, like, that's fundamentally
all. Yeah, and that's the Tim Keller thing, isn't it? It's not only true, it's attractive, it's good, I mean, Glenn Scrivener always does his evangelism training is like, can you answer this question? The most amazing thing for me about being a Christian is .. I think that's how he starts it. It's like, you know, just talk about that. Or, you know, what would you give? You know, it's like the thing that really gets me about Jesus at the moment is, and I think you're right, if we haven't got answers to that, that's attractive and compelling.
We need people having less conversations, so they're not putting everyone on.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, on that encouraging note, thank you. Great. Should we move smoothly on to Ron?